Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Cohen's Corner. So this is our first episode since the World Series ended. So we have a lot to talk about with the World Series, as well as, of course, our favorite subject, the Mets. And we have a lot to talk about of things that haven't been going on with the Mets, maybe things that should be going on. We're going to get into all of that. And we have a very special guest with us to break all of that down. We are welcoming Ryan Finkelstein to the show this week. And Ryan hosts the Locked On Mets podcast, which is the only daily podcast about the New York Mets. So if you just can't get enough of the Cohen's Corner and you want to listen to a podcast about the Mets every single day, definitely check out Ryan's podcast. And you can also find some of his writing about the Mets at justbaseball.com. So Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you coming on the podcast with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So something we like to do at, I'm sure I've said this at the beginning of a lot of our podcasts, so this might be a bit of a common intro, but something we like to do with all of our guests is kind of go through how they became a Mets fan and kind of got indoctrinated into this fan base that we're all now a part of, whether we like it or not. So Ryan, could you kind of talk us through like your Mets origin story and how you first kind of became involved with the team, whether it was a season, a player, or like a particular instance that really brought you to becoming a Mets fan?
I think like a lot of people, it was just passed down. I didn't really have a choice. I was born a Mets fan. My dad, just a huge diehard Mets fan. I actually was just recently looking up some stuff about the Braves, and I found out they clinched their first NL East title on September 14th, 1995, my original birthday. So I've been cast as a tortured Mets fan since I first came onto this earth. So yeah, that's basically been my story. It was all my dad, and I thank him every day.
Yeah, that's funny. I think all of our dads kind of brought us into this pit of misery. So thank you to them. But exactly. So I guess you enjoyed this misery enough to kind of go into the media world and start your own podcast. So how did you kind of get involved with Locked On and start Locked On Mets?
Well, it's good because now, you know, I can actually call it a job, and it's becoming a little less about just straight fandom. But yeah, I started with Locked On right before the 2019 season. I was a senior at the time, getting my degree in journalism. I just stumbled across the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I was like, that's pretty cool. Let me check out the Locked On Mets show. And I found out there wasn't a host. It was, it went to the website, just said coming soon for pretty much all the MLB shows. And I think they had Yankees and Dodgers. That was it when I first signed on. And the CEO's email was right at the bottom of the website. I hit him up, talked to him. We had a good conversation. It didn't really lead to anything. And after a couple of weeks of not hearing back, I just said, you know what? It's their team every day. I just started sending them episodes like I was hosting the show. So I started emailing them episodes of Locked On Mets. And after the second or third one, he's like, you know what? All right, you have it. Here's some notes. And that was basically the origin story. It took me a while to get my footing. It wasn't really until the Marcus Stroman trade that I started to get an audience and kind of figure out what I should be doing. But yeah, it's been a fun ride. I'm now almost at 700 episodes in less than three full years. So it's crazy how they stack up when you do five a week.
Well, good for you. That's quite a lot of episodes talking about the Mets. I think we're only up to like, this is our 27th episode, I believe. So we've got a long way to go to match you. Do you have like a favorite, either like a favorite episode you've done or favorite guest you've had on your own podcast so far?
Yeah. You know, there's been so many. I think that as far as a recurring guest, Justin Toscano's been great. He started on the Mets beat the same year I started the podcast. So he's always been really gracious with this time. I think the one that makes me smile the most thinking back is I had Mitch Stetter on, who was a funky left-handed reliever in like the mid-2000s. But it was my 500th episode. I wanted to get Gary Sheffield on. And a little bit harder to book Gary Sheffield than you would think. Couldn't quite nab him. So I was like, you know, who gave up the home run? Found out it was Mitch Stetter. Didn't have any social media. Took some investigative journalism. I found like a picture of him on Twitter. I DM'd the person who took the picture. She was like a reporter. So she actually was kind of very, very on board with trying to get him for me. And a couple hours later, I'm talking to him about giving up the home run. So that was a really fun episode to have Mitch Stetter on, even though no one knows who Mitch Stetter is, but I enjoyed the conversation.
That's a very interesting guest. I mean, that's smart of you to kind of think if you couldn't get Sheffield to kind of go that way. That's really cool.
I've never heard of Mitch Stetter till now, yeah. I'll be totally honest. So I'm going to go look that up.
He was great. You know, for I'm actually in the works of doing a history podcast for Just Baseball that's kind of born out of that idea of trying to talk to some of these these former players who, you know, don't really get a chance to be remembered. And for Mitch Stetter, you know, I think he's actually working in the Royals organization, but it was certainly the first podcast that I think he's ever been asked to be on.
Wow. I bet he was really excited. You know what I mean? Like some people you have on, you can kind of like tell, I guess, if they want to be there or not. I bet since he's not kind of asked to do things like that often, I bet he was pretty into it.
Yeah. I think at first he was kind of like just surprised that someone was asking to talk to him, but he did, when he was talking about the home run, what he said was, he said, you know, I had no idea it was Sheffield's 500. So he's like, you know, it's the seventh inning, Sheffield hits the home run, and everyone's pouring out of the dugout, and he's thinking like, what is going on here? This is the tie game. It wasn't even to put the Mets up. And then he looked at the scoreboard and realizes, okay, I guess I'll be part of Mets history, or just baseball history, forever. And so I think he was like, yeah, here's the result of that. You know, 10 years later, I'm talking on a random podcast about Gary Sheffield.
If there's any like obscure former Mets that have given up, either former Mets that have given up milestone home runs to other people, maybe we can look those up, because that could, maybe we'll take a page out of your book for our future podcast guests.
So what do you say? The World Series just ended. Why don't we get into it? Ryan, kind of take us through what your takeaways were and your kind of gut reaction of the Atlanta Braves being World Series champions.
Frustrating. You know, I think that, look, the Braves, they came together. I think it's very similar to when the Nationals won it. You know, they got hot second half, carried it over into the playoffs. Good pitching generally is a good recipe for success. And then they just had guys coming in that lineup that just were really clutch, a lot of veteran players. So I think that's instructive moving forward. I think we saw this year quality veterans can be really helpful. You know, Jonathan Villar had his moments. Kevin Pillar overall, I think, was kind of a net negative for the Mets, but there were stretches where you needed that. So I think looking forward, what the Mets can kind of learn is, for one, not to give up on a season. And the Braves didn't obviously, it paid off for them. The other thing that I've been talking about recently is, you know, everyone talks about the collapse in the second half with the Mets and how it related to the Braves, you know, getting off to that great run. But I also think that the first half, when the Mets were rolling a bit, they really let the Braves hang in longer than they should have. So the way I look at it, if the Mets had kind of, you know, put them out of it in the first half, none of that would have happened. But there you go. The Braves got another banner.
I was kind of annoyed, like my gut reaction when I saw the final out, because, you know, I was watching and I saw the final out. I was like, all right, this is kind of annoying. And like, I didn't actually watch the post game ceremony. Usually I do, like I did for the Dodgers last year, but I was like, I don't want to watch them like celebrating, whatever. But then I woke up the next day and I was like, okay with it, because Jake and I have talked about this. Like, I don't really have anything against any particular Braves player. There's no one I like root against, really. So I was happy for the players. I was happy for Brian Snitker. I was happy for Ron Washington, obviously. And yeah, it's like, you know what? They deserved it. It's hard. It's like, it's annoying. It's frustrating. But whenever the Mets eventually, like, even win the division, it'll just feel a lot. It'll be even sweeter, given everything we've had to go through. But yeah, I have to say, I wasn't really angry about it. I was just kind of like resigned. I'm like, all right, this is what it's going to be. The last two full seasons have both been won by NL East teams that nobody believed in. Maybe the Mets will be the next one. Like, I don't know. They came within a few games of almost having a similar narrative in 2015. So maybe we can like use some of that energy, have it bottled up, and like use it in a future season. But yeah, I feel like my gut reaction was just like disappointment and like just a little bit of like resignation. But then the next day I was like, you know what? It's whatever. I hope we don't have to hear. I mean, we're going to have to hear about it all next year, of course. So it's fine. I would have rather the Astros won so that conversation could take place in the American League games rather than like 19 times against the Braves next year. That's the only thing, is that like the Mets are going to have to hear about it a lot. So that's the only thing I'm not looking forward to, really, about the Braves having won this year.
In some respects, it was almost good that the Nationals had won it, because I've experienced it recently, where even though it sucks when it happens, it's also not that big of a deal. Like, it doesn't really impact you that much. So coming off of that, it, for me, the Braves winning it is worse than the Nationals winning it. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. So I don't, like you said, you root for some of the individuals. Seeing Travis d'Arnaud get a World Series was cool. You know, who hates Freddie Freeman? I know he's a Mets killer, but it's hard to dislike him as a person. So yeah, I think for certain individuals, I was happy, but ultimately, I just, like you, turned it off and try to think about something else.
I mean, I keep saying this. I say this to Elizabeth all the time. Just thank God it wasn't the Phillies. Like, I hate the Phillies. Like, if it had been them, this would be a whole different story.
Nothing could be as bad as Yankees-Phillies, okay? Oh, yeah. Like I said, if we can survive that, that was, like, an unwatchable World Series for me. So. Yeah.
But, I mean, if it was Philly, I don't know what I would do myself. But the fact that it's Atlanta, I mean, like you said, I'm happy for Freddie Freeman. I mean, yeah, he's a Met killer. But the Met killers I can't stand are the ones that don't do anything against any other teams, like the Andrew Stevensons of the world, the Paul DeYoungs, like them. But Freddie Freeman kills everybody. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a little easier to take knowing that he's doing this against the rest of the league and not just us. So I'm happy for him. Happy for Snicker, like you said, Darno. And I mean,
Charlie Morton's been on a bunch of teams. Yeah.
He's won before though with Houston, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just, if it wasn't Atlanta, it'd be better, but it is kind of nice that a team that wasn't fully in it at the deadline, like standings wise, they kind of were just like, they saw what was in front of them with the Mets not being a really great contender in front of them and kind of just went for it and got all these pieces. When Acuna went down, we kind of thought, all right, well, this is the end of the Braves for the year, but it was kind of the opposite. They went and got Soler. They went and got Eddie Rosario. They got so many players. Adam Duvall was huge for them down the stretch. So it's kind of nice for a team to be really aggressive at the deadline and for it to pay off.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the Mets, for a lot of that first half, you know, Pete Alonso at times, you know, we're all right, we're in first place. And they really kind of shrugged off some of the struggles they were going through when they were in first place. So I think moving forward, maybe this will give the Mets more of a sense of urgency next year that even though it's a marathon, you got to be winning throughout the entire marathon and really, you know, always have your foot on the gas to make sure that you're creating that separation. Otherwise, a team like the Braves can sneak up on you.
Well, that's the thing. I felt like we have talked about this a little bit before. I kind of felt like the team in the first half was a team that really wasn't used to being in first place. And like, they really were like, oh, this is cool. Like, all right, we're good. And it's like, it definitely showed me a team that is not used to, you're like you said, putting your foot on the gas and being like, okay, we have this advantage. That should drive you more rather than make you relax. So I definitely didn't get that sense last year. And hopefully, I mean, I was actually just going to ask you, we kind of talked about it a little bit, but like, what other like lessons do you think next year's Mets team can learn from this year's Braves team, just in terms of like how to approach the season or just other moves that are important to make? Like, what was kind of your main takeaway as to like, all right, how can this specifically be a learning experience for the 2022 Mets?
I think one of the common phrases I've used on my show is the greatest sin in baseball is that Jacob DeGrom hasn't pitched in a playoff since 2015. So I think one of the things that they can take away is just, you know, you just have to get there. And it's so important just to get into the playoffs, especially with baseball where, you know, if you're talking about like the NBA, a lot of times, you know, the best team is probably going to win if they're healthy. Whereas in Major League Baseball, obviously the Giants and the Dodgers were better teams this year than the Braves. But the Braves are champions because they got hot at the right time. So I think that the biggest thing is just to make sure that you get there, however you have to pull that off. So hopefully the Mets remain aggressive throughout the offseason, then into the season. And, you know, I'd love to see a year where the Mets, you know, go back to 1986 and just dominate and have a huge lead all year. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be so much fun. And I feel like that's what a lot of us kind of envisioned when Steve Cohen bought the team and said that he's going to run the team like a big market team should be run. I mean, which we haven't really seen in the past. And I think he's going to do that. I mean, we'll see if they reach that sort of level of dominance, but I think he's definitely going to put his best foot forward to try to accomplish that, but we'll see. But I want to know, was there kind of going into the postseason, was there a World Series matchup you were kind of hoping for?
I would say on the National League side, probably the Brewers were the team that I just, you know, didn't have anything against. So I wanted the Brewers, maybe the Giants also, I think were a really good story. I would have liked to see the Giants, especially now in retrospect with Buster Posey retiring, that would have been a really great way for him to go out. And the American League side, it was just, I preferred it not to be the Astros or the Yankees, but I didn't really mind any team in the American League. I don't have much against any of them. 2017 was almost 5 years ago now. Didn't really affect me as much as others do still harbor a grudge against the Astros. So I guess I was rooting against teams more than I was pulling for teams.
Yeah, I understand that. I was kind of hoping that Dodgers Astros would meet back up and the Dodgers could kind of get their revenge on them, you know?
That would have been fun. Yeah, that would have been a lot of fun.
Pretty cool. So, oh, well.
I was over here really hoping for Rays Brewers, which didn't even come close to happening because, well, I like the Rays. They came within a couple games last year of like beating the Dodgers in the World Series. I really thought they had a chance and they didn't even get past the Red Sox. So that was a little disappointing for me. And the Brewers did their best Mets impression against the Braves by literally not hitting at all. It was like, that was the least offensively intimidating team in the playoffs I have like ever seen. It was actually incredible. I was texting someone. I was like, they thought it was Halloween and they put their Mets costume on like a little bit too early, I have to say. But yeah, that didn't even come close to happening. And then I was like, oh well, yeah, it'd be good for the Giants to like get past the Dodgers because then like Wilmer Flores could have a chance at another championship. And then he struck out in that really tragic check swing way to end the NLDS. I was like, it had to be Wilmer. It of all people. When he came up to end that series, I was like, this is either going to end really heroically or like really tragically. And it was like kind of tragic. So yeah, none of my matchups. And I was like, oh, the White Sox are cool. Maybe they'll get past the Astros. Nope, that didn't happen. So I feel like I always end up rooting for the underdogs in the playoffs, which like underdogs excluding the NL East teams. And like most of the time they don't end up actually doing anything. So I was just happy the Cardinals didn't win the wild card game. I guess that didn't happen. That would have been really annoying for me. Because I don't know, I feel like I dislike them more than I dislike most teams. So I was just happy that didn't happen. But yes, alas, we were deprived Rays Brewers. That would have been nice. There would have been a lot of bullpen, as we saw in the World Series, there was anyway. So maybe next year, maybe the year after that, we'll see. Maybe the Rays will get back to the World Series.
So Ryan, let's kind of bring it back to the Mets. What's kind of your thought process on what's going on with the search for president of baseball operations and a general manager? Like, I know people are kind of upset they haven't hired anybody yet, but me personally, I'd rather them get the right person than kind of just rush to hire someone. I mean, it's kind of frustrating that it seems a lot of people are turning down the job, but I mean, they'll find the right person eventually, I would think. But kind of what have been your thoughts on the whole situation?
I'm more frustrated in the coverage of the situation than the situation. I think that if the Twins were hiring a GM, we would not be hearing about every single candidate that may or may not have been interviewed and all these you know, denies of permission or, you know, denying to even want the job. I think that's a lot more common than we probably realize, you know, where people are happy in their situations. You know, there's a lot of good jobs in baseball and they don't all belong to the Mets. There's a lot of different organizations that have been building things. And if you're part of a team like the Brewers or the Rays or any of these really good front offices that the Mets might be trying to poach people from, they're in a good situation currently. So I'm trying not to take too much from it, but I'll be honest, when it's getting to the point where the GM meetings are starting and a lockout is pretty imminent very soon and all these things that are going to take place soon, the Mets have to figure something out one way or the other. And so I agree, they got to do their due diligence, make sure they make the right hire. But I also don't want Sandy Alderson running this offseason. So I'm at a point for a while now where I've said I'm not even really talking about it on my show because I feel like there's nothing concrete that's come out. But, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to getting some resolution and then finally being able to draw some judgment on what they ultimately decide to do here.
Yeah, I like what you said because it is frustrating how I feel like people seem to latch on to every piece of Mets news, even when it's like national writers who don't technically have any reason to cover the Mets more than another team. But I do think like, yeah, obviously if it were the Twins hiring the new president of baseball ops, no one would care, first of all. And secondly, we wouldn't know who it was until they were hired. But unfortunately, the Mets aren't the Minnesota Twins and the fan base and the media is a lot different. So I guess we don't have anything. We can't really do anything about that. But yeah, it's like, that's the thing is I've never heard of most of these people before they come up in conversation. So like, I'm not personally like that disappointed by any one person saying no, because it's not like I have a huge allegiance to that person unless I really heard of them before. But let's face it, most of the people that are coming up in terms of like assistant GMs for other teams, no one, like most people haven't heard, most fans haven't heard of these people. So it's like, if this guy or woman turns them down, it's like, it's disappointing, but it's not like, oh, I was really hoping that they were the person. I feel like there's definitely plenty of people qualified out there for the Mets front office. It's just a matter of, now the only thing I worry about is all this kind of media circus that's been going on in terms of people covering it like it's been a huge, colossal failure. Is that going to have any impact on like how candidates actually feel about the position, or did, is like, do you think their opinion of the Mets has changed at all because of how the last month has gone? Or do you think people's opinions of the Mets job has like, has been somewhat stable regardless of how the actual search has gone?
I think that overall the way the Mets are covered is based on how they've been for the last two decades. You know, where they're covered like a laughing stock, because let's be honest, they've kind of been a laughing stock. So it's just natural for these national writers to jump on them any chance they get, because it gets a reaction. I think they enjoy it. But overall, I think what might be hurting the Mets right now, for one, they had a chance to really start something different under Steve Cohen. And the first year felt a lot like what the Mets have been in years past. You know, they didn't really break away from those past Wilpon narratives. You know, they make two hires to lead their front office, and both of them have to exit in scandal. You know, Steve Cohen's Twitter behavior is not something that if I'm an executive, I necessarily want to step into a big role where I know that on a random Tuesday, if the Mets get swept, here's my owner out there undermining me on Twitter as I'm trying to solve the problem. So I do think that it's a very complicated job for someone to step into, but I don't believe that people just aren't interested at all. I'm sure that there is still going to be a candidate that's intrigued by the prospect of coming to the Mets. And I think it's more about, you know, do their personalities align with Steve Cohen, and do they align with how the Mets want to construct their front office? Steve Cohen is not going to be just completely sitting on the sidelines like he maybe articulated in the past, where he said, you know, I'll let baseball people run all the baseball ops. I don't think that was necessarily, you know, how he planned on doing things. Now that he's more, you know, ingrained in what's going on, I do think Steve Cohen's going to have an opinion on a lot of decisions. And I think he's certainly an interesting guy to work for. So I think the job is definitely a tough one, but I also think that it's a little bit overblown the way it's covered.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I just hate how, you know, like they reached out to Stearns and they were denied permission. They reach out to Billy Beane, he doesn't want to come. Well, all right, they're setting their sights high, you know what I mean? Like trying to get the best executive possible. And then just because they didn't get them, that's not just like an LOL Mets thing. Like the reaction to that, I mean, isn't that what you'd want your organization to do, is kind of go after the best people possible and then kind of work their way down? Like I never understood what the problem was in at least trying to get some of those guys. But then also like to just, during the season, some people thought it was a foregone conclusion that they were just going to want to uproot their lives and come here when they're already in a good situation. Like Billy Beane's been in Oakland for a few decades. And I mean, he's had plenty of opportunities to leave for better situations than the Mets. I mean, he had a chance to turn around the Red Sox way back when Theo Epstein ended up doing it. So, I mean, it wasn't a foregone conclusion that any of these guys were going to want to kind of just come right over. But to say that it's an LOL Mets thing, when it really is not, I mean, they probably wouldn't have left for any other organization. You know what I mean? Like that was kind of just blown out of proportion, in my opinion. It's just frustrating that whenever something doesn't go the Mets way, everyone with like in the public perception, it's just, oh, it's LOL Mets. Like it's the Mets doing Mets things again. When, I mean, it's really not. Sometimes it is. Don't get me wrong.
Wrong in this search.
Yeah.
That we know of.
Oh, yeah.
I like that you have to put that qualifier that way.
But you know what I mean? It's not like there's been nothing hugely laughable about how the Mets have actually gone about this search.
But people try to act like there is. Right. Like it's just annoying. It's typical Mets coverage. But I mean, what else are you going to expect? But I mean, hopefully they can kind of square this away and get this done soon. Because like you said, the GM meetings are coming up now in a couple of days, and we're going to have Sandy Alderson in there. Like, that's not what any of us want. So, I mean, they got to figure this out now. But, Ryan, all right, say you're the GM, right? They hire you. It's your time to make decisions. What's the first few moves you're going to make? I mean, obviously, the qualifying offers them aside. I mean, you'll let us know what you want to do with them. But what are a couple of players maybe you'd want to bring in from the outside, or who you definitely want to re-sign that's a pending free agent?
Well, so first of all, I saw, I think it was Puma yesterday, talking about how the Mets may not extend the qualifying offer to Syndergaard. I think that's a big mistake. He wants to come back, give him the qualifying offer.
I've seen other reports that they will. Like, I feel like there might be conflicting information about that. I saw something on SNY, you know, who knows for sure. Obviously, there's been conflicting reports about everything. But I did see something else that they are planning to. So I'm not sure if that's like the definitive information, but yeah. I did also see that as well. So I'm kind of like, I'm not sure, but I also saw from SMY that they probably will. So who knows? I don't know. But I did see that they might or probably yeah. will.
So that's, to me, that's the first step. I think obviously they're going to extend it to Conforto as well. He'll decline it. I really believe that Scott Boras is bandbox shopping. That's a future episode of Locked On Mets next week. Scott Boras is going to try to put him in Philly, Cincinnati, one of these ballparks where Conforto can really boost his value. So I think Conforto's gone. And with that, the move I've been talking about a lot recently is signing Starling Marte. I really think that Marte is the only free agent outfielder that can replace Michael Conforto and also offer an improvement, especially defensively. I think if you have Marte, for one, it gives you insurance for another Nimmo injury to have a center fielder that's really solid. And then the two of them out there in the outfield, if Jeff McNeil's playing left, now your outfield is pretty solid. I think if they're going to hang on to Dominic Smith, he's a good like fourth outfielder as far as giving you upside offensively. I like Kalia Lee as a potential internal option as a fourth outfielder. So I think that one signing could solidify your outfield. I've been operating since the trade deadline under the assumption that Javi Baez is going to be back. Between giving up PCA and also just, you know, the connection with Lindor, I sort of think that's going to happen. So if you make those two moves and you just look at the Mets on paper, at that point, the only real question is third base. And I think between Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos coming through the pipeline, between Louis Guillorme, potentially JD Davis, although I think he might get moved, I don't think third base is as big of an issue as some might make it out to be. Robinson Cano probably gets some time over there this year as well. You could always bring Jonathan Villar back if you wanted to. It doesn't cost too much. I could just see that working out where if that's your one hole, if you did get Marte and Baez, the team just makes a lot of sense to me on paper.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I keep forgetting. I keep trying to forget that Cano is back on the books next year, but you're right. But yeah. I guess I won't feel totally like fine until there is definitely a DH next year. I'll be like a little bit nervous about what his role is going to be because he's probably staying because I don't know who wants him at this point, but yeah, I think Marte is interesting because you're right. He's what, like 33 and
yeah.
He definitely would be, well, very good defensively. Also, he led, I think, like both leagues in stolen bases last year because of the trade from the Marlins to Oakland. So that would certainly be interesting, would give him another added element of speed. And you're right. Like, I love Brandon Nimmo. You can't necessarily count on him for 150 games, but he's definitely worth, I think, penciling in at least as like a center fielder, but also having another outfielder that can play center well. Is important. So right field / center field is a good area to address. Yeah, the third base thing will be interesting because I do feel like the Mets have a lot of infield prospects that bat-wise would probably be ready to make their debut sometime. I don't know about Beatty, but maybe Vientos. Like, Beatty's, I think, a couple years behind him. But yeah, that'll be interesting. I think, yeah, it's like there's lots of free agents out there. There's a lot of really good outfielders. There's Chris Taylor on the Dodgers too, who had like a really good NLDS as well. There's a lot of people, and there's a lot of pitchers too, which is going to be something they're definitely going to need because, you know, I don't know if you can count on like Tyler McGill / David Peterson being a, like, if like one or both of them is like, McGill had some good starts, but I just don't know. I feel like there's still so many question marks that I think adding another rotation piece is also going to be really important, whether it's, well, hopefully re-signing Stroman, whether it's like adding Kevin Gausman. There's a lot of options out there, but I don't know. I just feel like it's still hard for me to focus on the potential free agents when they don't actually have a front office. So like, it's definitely good to think about, but I'm also, I don't know. I'm not like daydreaming as much maybe as some people about that, but I do think, yeah, I mean, there's, and also you mentioned Kalia Lee as well. Like, that's why, you know, Kevin Pillar did some good stuff as a Met. I'm not personally devastated by the thought of him as a free agent. I think he can be replaced. So he had a good run this year. He did get hit in the face. He did come back 2 weeks later, but I think there's definitely someone, they don't need to be trading for a fourth outfielder. If they're going to sign someone, it should be someone who's going to start. Like, we don't need to have another Keon Broxton situation. We don't need to be trading for Jake Marisnyk. Like, there's people internally that could be a fourth outfielder, Kalia Lee or / Dominic Smith / Jeff McNeil or whoever could be one of them. So I'm personally not going to like move go hell or high water to like bring Pilar back, when I think that Lee probably should make his like come back to the team next year. So yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's still hard for me to be like, oh yeah, they should do this and this and this. But I'm like, there's so much, they don't have any other people in place to like even make those decisions practically. So, but I do agree with everything you said.
Yeah, when you do 5 podcasts a week, you got to be doing this type of stuff. You know, I can't do 5 shows on the front office, so I've been talking about a lot of it. And I think the one thing, when it comes to the rotation in particular, I think the Mets need to go into next season with Peterson and McGill as their 6 and 7 starter on the depth chart. I think that provides you the real depth. Both of them could be in AAA if you really did have just a great staff. They provide that insurance. I don't think that they should be going into spring training with those two competing for that fifth starter job. So I think that is definitely something the Mets are going to look to address. And then, you know, I think when it comes to filling out the rest of the team, I definitely think that the Mets have, like you said, they've wasted way too much resources on fourth outfielders in the past 3 years. So yeah, they can't be doing that again. You can find 2 or 3 minor league free agents at the end of the offseason to come in and compete with your young guys to win that type of a job. So we'll see.
I agree. Cause like, look at what guys, I mean, even like Mason Williams, for example, right?
Yeah.
Nobody had even thought about him at the beginning of the year, and the Mets had all those injuries, and yeah, he wasn't a world beater when he came up to the Mets, but he was pretty serviceable. He had some big hits. He played a really good center field. So, I mean, there's guys that you can kind of find to fill that role. You don't need to kind of like what, when Van Wagenen traded for Mariznick last year, I mean, he traded away a good reliever now who's,
was in the Astros. Astros on the Astros yeah, postseason so roster. Like,
there's no need to kind of to do that. I mean,
and you can always trade for a Cameron Maybin to strike out 25 times for you.
Oh my god,
you can always do that. It's always available.
That's how long the season was. I kind of even forgot about that.
Remember Wilfredo Tovar? I think he batted third once.
Yeah, there was like the one lineup with Tovar and Maybin, and oh my god, it's crazy.
Cameron Maybin bat third like for a week straight, and I was like, what is going on? Like, I could bat third, like
crazy. That was nuts, but I don't know. I kind of have like a gut feeling that the Mets are going to try to make another blockbuster deal, like trade this offseason. And if they were to do that, I just think obviously they do have guys coming up that could play third base. I just think logically that would probably be the spot if they could go get a guy like Matt Chapman or maybe even the Jose Ramirez. I know we got an Indian star last year. It didn't work out.
I think the Indians just picked up his option though.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But they might, you know what I mean? But they're the Indians. I mean, they might be willing to trade him and see what the Mets can offer. But I don't know. I just kind of have a gut feeling that they're going to attempt to do something because Steve Cohen wants to do something big this offseason. I mean, last year he kind of was playing nice and not going over luxury tax and doing all that. I just kind of think this year is the year to kind of just blow by it and kind of go for it. But that doesn't mean trading away the whole farm because, you know, we don't have the best farm system in baseball. But I do think that he's going to kind of go for a real win now approach this offseason. That's what I'm hoping for at least.
Well, since you mentioned Matt Chapman, I actually talked with the Locked On A's host about a Matt Chapman trade for today's show. And what we ultimately landed on was a Mark Vientos, Khalil Lee, I think Roberto Dominguez was the package we were talking about. So yeah, I think that ultimately you could make a move like that, but you also have to weigh it. Cause the more I talked about it and really thought about it, I'm like, is this really what the Mets should be doing? I mean, if they had the resources to just blow out the luxury tax, should they just be focusing on free agency and, you know, letting, you know, the potential for a Brett Beatty or a Mark Vientos to factor in next year? I think the one thing that moves the needle more than anything is the surprise rookie. And I look at Mark Vientos right now, and I think he's in a very similar place as Pete Alonso was heading into the 2019 season, where all he's been hearing is you can't play defense, you know, and it's, these guys aren't robots. You know, if one of Mark Vientos's friends is listening to a podcast or whatever, and all they're talking about is the fact he can't play defense, it's getting back to these guys. So Mark Vientos is going into this offseason knowing that the only thing standing in his way of realizing his MLB dream is the defense. So I think there's still a chance that he shows up at spring training and surprises us. I mean, Pete Alonso, I looked up in July or August this year, and he was like atop the outs above average leaderboards for first baseman. Now that didn't hold, but he has gone from a guy who everyone said would only be a DH to a quality defensive first baseman. So I'm not saying that Vientos is ever going to win a gold glove, but I would still leave that door open for a guy that can hit 40 home runs for you at some point to potentially win out a job. And I think that the bat is legit. He just has to be. And also, when you're shifting as much as the Mets do and he's playing next to Francisco Lindor, you know, you can get away with it a little bit. So if he's hitting more than a J.D. Davis did, you can maybe get by with that lack of glove. So we'll see what the Mets do. But I do think that the potential for them to pop off next year, it might be tied to one of those guys, a Beatty, a Vientos, even a Khalil Lee, having a surprise year.
I mean, Matt Chapman's defense is stellar. I feel like he didn't hit that much this year, though. Like, am I wrong? Was he like
struck out like 35% of the time? He I think he's still at 27 home runs, but he was not the same player as he was in 2018 and 2019.
Yeah, like I just don't know. Again, he's fantastic defensively, but like am I willing to trade Mark Vientos necessarily for him at this time? Like, I don't know. I don't know if like that's. I agree. I don't know if that's what they should be doing, because and especially we saw last year, like the Mets really need more offense next year. And if they have this guy who can play third base in the minors that could hit really well, like I don't know if I'm willing to move that type of bat for Matt Chapman, who, again, is great defensively, Gold Glove candidate every single year. And they do need good defense, and their third base defense has been bad. We know that. But that would make me, like, a little bit nervous, I think. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I'm, like, moving the farm for him. I don't know if I'm moving the farm for anyone, to be honest, because you're right. There's so many free agents out there. They theoretically can spend a lot of money. Yeah, I know the Cano contract is coming back, like we said, so they're going to have that extra probably $20 million. But I don't know. I don't know if like a blockbuster trade is like where that would excite me that much, because it probably would mean that someone we've heard that's really highly touted would have to be moved. And like, I don't know if that's like a net positive for the organization, unless the player is like, unless they like win the World Series next year and that player is great. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't know if that's really a net positive when they do have people that their farm system is getting stronger, and those players, some of those players might be able to make an impact next season.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned Chris Taylor before. I got to imagine that whatever Matt Chapman's making in his second to last year of arbitration, I don't think Chris Taylor's going to make that much more than that in free agency, and you don't have to trade any prospects to get him. So,
you can play third in the outfield. Exactly. As we saw in the playoffs.
And last year, I was really banging the drum for Kiki Hernandez. And I think that ultimately Kiki Hernandez wanted to go to a team where he knew he was going to play every day. So it's for a guy like Chris Taylor, I think that's probably as big as the money's going to be this offseason. Can the Mets guarantee him a starting job? But if you say Chris Taylor's your third baseman or your left fielder and Jeff McNeil's your third baseman, however they decide to structure their team, I think Chris Taylor can make a lot of sense too. And yeah, he gives you a ton of versatility, a ton of experience playing a big game. So I think you really do have to mind free agency for all it's worth, because these big trades that you're making, they just continue to hammer that farm system. And if you want to be a sustainable winner, you really do got to make sure that farm's strong.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think their farm system has definitely improved over the last few years, especially because some of their higher up guys have really started to develop. I mean, the Mauricios, the Beatties, the Vientos. But yeah, and I just think like it's a similar conversation as we were having last year, kind of a lot of us Mets fans, about hopefully the DH will be here in the NL, because I think that'll solve a lot of problems for the Mets, and it'll give them they'll have a lot of other options to use this offseason. I mean, if you want to go get a guy like a Nelson Cruz or like an old veteran bat that is only a DH, like maybe the Mets are missing that, like a real veteran presence kind of. Like, I would love Nelson Cruz to come to the Mets. I would love kind of – what if they went and signed Castellanos and didn't feel pressured to play him in the outfield all the time? They could DH him. They could DH Cano. There's so many other things that it would open up. I mean, especially like you signed Chris Taylor.
To be honest, that would be fine with me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's where probably the Mets are hoping, if there's a DH, that's where Cano's going to see most of his time in the lineup is as the DH. But I just think – I don't know, Ryan, your thoughts on it, but I just think that would benefit the Mets, I mean, almost more than any other club in baseball, just to kind of have the NLDH, and it would give them so many other options.
Yeah, I think going into the 2020 season, the shortened year, I was writing for Mets Bryants at the time, and we were doing our bold predictions, and my bold prediction was that Robinson Cano was going to have a great season, and he did. And then we find out, steroids. But I do think that if you had put Robinson Cano on the Mets this year, you can't tell me that he wouldn't have been a better option than the Wilfredo Tovar that you mentioned, Travis Blankenhorn, Jose Peraza got a ton of time. I mean, even in his worst year, 2019, Robinson Cano, I don't remember the exact number, but the extra base hits he had in 2019, a year where he got hurt a couple times, would have ranked second on the Mets this year. So to think that Robinson Cano can't still have an impact with his bat, I think it's selling him a little bit short, even at his age. The guy is naturally one of the best baseball players of all time. I mean, let's just – that swing is going to translate still. I don't think he's going to be a starter, but you see what Albert Pujols did with the Dodgers, and I wouldn't be surprised that Cano can be really impactful in 350 plate appearances next year.
Yeah, plus a lot of the younger players really liked him. Yeah. Like, Pete Alonso spoke really positively. I mean, who knows if that impression – like, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, if a player comes back from a full season steroid suspension and the team liked him before, like, is there – I wonder if there's, like, a different perception of that player who is perceived as a really positive veteran leader. I don't know that, but – because I'm not in the dugout or the clubhouse. But, you know, I do recall, like, a lot of Mets players speaking really positively about him and his kind of – almost like a Nelson Cruz, who also had a steroid suspension – like type presence where it's like this veteran guy who has been around forever and can still hit. That maybe that's not the worst thing, you know, mm-hmm. if he actually like, maybe that isn't a terrible thing. Again, I don't know if that perception changes now that he's was suspended for steroids for an entire season, but like, but again, also I just like, I don't know if I can assume that the DH is going to come next year because like, I know the CBA is being renegotiated, but people kind of thought it would be there this year and it wasn't. So like, I don't know if you can count on that just because you just never know how these negotiations go. So like, I mentally am not going to count on that, but yeah, I don't know that if I feel like if they need a DH though, I would not sign Nelson Cruz. I know you mentioned him, Jake, like I just feel like Cano is practically the same player in terms of like what the value he might give from the bat. Maybe Cruz probably has maybe a bit more pop, but again, he didn't really do much in the playoffs or like near the end of the season, so I don't know. But there, you're right. I think honestly the conclusion I've come to is that there is a lot of options in terms of like free agents, and like I personally, unless it's a really another cornerstone player like Lindor, I don't know if I'm willing to trade like any of their top prospects this offseason, to be honest. Because also we've seen the last couple off seasons, you know, they traded Pete Crow Armstrong for Bias, which if Bias comes back, that probably hopefully is worth it. They didn't sign Kumar Rocker. Like they kind of their last two first round picks, like they don't have any. So it's like there's a kind of a dearth of really high end talent. They haven't like they don't have their last two first round picks. So I don't, again, those guys would have been several years away when they were drafted, but I don't know if like that's the smartest move to be trading like another like first round equivalent pick or like a really top prospect this offseason again, and kind of, unless it's really for a player that, you know, you never know, like who knows, but that's not where my gut is telling me that they should be making moves, but I'm not in charge. I don't know.
And that's also why I'd be hesitant to sign someone that got a qualifying offer. You know, unless it's like a Carlos Correa where, of course, I mean, you know, if you can get Carlos Correa, you know, you're going to give up a pick for him. But I think the Mets, you know, Javi Baez, obviously he's your own free agent. You know, Starling Marte was traded, no qualifying offer. So I think you can still find some free agents where you don't have to give up that pick. And I think that would be smart as well. Like I wouldn't get, for me, as much as I've talked about how bad Castellanos is defensively, between that, between his really big splits, road and home, and between the fact you'd have to give up a pick for him, like that's a free agent I would stay away from because of all of those factors. And I think that you can find enough talent without having to give up that pick. And like you said, after a couple of drafts where you didn't have that first round pick, it's going to be good this year that the Mets will have like what, three picks? Yeah, if Conforto gets over 50, I think you'll have a comp pick in the first round. So that's one. You got the Rocker. You got your own pick. So you're going to have at least three picks that are pretty high up there where you can jumpstart that farm system, you know, even quicker.
And that's what makes, I mean, even this front office hire even more important. I know it's more in baseball than other sports, more of a collaborative decision. I mean, you want to have the right person in place when you have not only such a big offseason coming up that's going to determine your future of the franchise for the next few years, but like you have such a big draft coming up. Like you want somebody that you really trust kind of making these decisions.
That's why Tommy Thanos could still be the guy that gets this job. I mean, he's been running those drafts. So I think the fact that he's still going to be there, that's the one part of the Mets front office that I've remained comfortable with.
I'm not as worried about. I agree. Like, I feel like they've drafted well. I'm not like losing sleep.
Yeah, they've done well in the draft. They really have.
Yeah. So I think that's the one place where they're in good shape through Brody, through the Sandy, Scott, all this stuff. they've drafted well. So I still feel good about that at least.
So Ryan, before we let you go, what is one under the radar kind of decision that you're kind of hoping the Mets front office decides to make this offseason?
Is it under the radar to say to trade JD Davis? Because I've been putting JD Davis in trades for a couple of years now. For me, JD, it's not that he's a bad guy or anything. He's a good hitter, but I think the problem with JD Davis is he just kind of gets in the way where because you have him, it prevents you from making other moves, giving other people chances. When you're on a downturn offensively, it's always nice. You look at JD Davis on the bench, like, well, I guess we should probably start him for a little bit. And he just kills you defensively. I can't see that double clutch for another season. I just can't do it. So I don't know if that's under the radar, but that's something I really hope happens this offseason. I don't want to see them move Dom because I think his value drops so much. And I think if you had the DH, you can find a role for Dominic Smith next year where he can boost his value. So I think that would be the one move I would say.
I think that's how I kind of feel about Jeff McNeil. And I mean, I guess his value's down too, but I'm just kind of over McNeil and having these temper tantrums on the field. And I mean, especially when he's not producing, that's just so annoying. And I don't know. I'm over the Jeff McNeil hype.
I'm less sentimental about the McNeil Davis duo than I have been in past off seasons. One thing I've been thinking about also, which I don't think that many people have really talked about is, the bullpen was pretty good this year. But one thing I was slightly worried about is I feel like Seth Lugo regressed a bit. And so I don't know if that had anything to do with the elbow surgery he had, but I just feel like he wasn't nearly as reliable. And I need to look into his stats more because I'm kind of just going based off what I remember. But I just feel like he wasn't nearly as locked down as he has proven to be. And so I don't know if that's just him getting worse. I hope not, but that might be something to keep an eye on too, is what his role will be in the bullpen next year, because they have Trevor May back next year. He signed for 2 years, so they'll have him, Diaz. I don't know I hope they don't re-sign Familia. I feel like that we talked about this. I think that ship needs to continue. It sailed once and then it came back to the shores and now it needs to sail again. And then hopefully they re-sign Loop. That would be, to me, a super important deal. He probably had – the only thing with Loop is, he probably had the best season of his life this year. But even Loop slightly worse next year would still be amazing. So I don't know what's going to happen there. But to me, someone to keep an eye on, at least in the bullpen for next year, is Seth Lugo. And, if he's going to be a dominant eighth inning guy, or if maybe that's not who he is anymore, which would be sad. So I don't know. That's just been something, again, no one's really been talking about it. I think he's under contract for next year, so he will be a Met. But that's something I'll be thinking about too, is either in spring training or just early next year, how he looks. Because having him be super dominant really fills out the bullpen. But I feel like when he struggled, the whole bullpen seemed a lot weaker. So I don't know. But again, not the top of their list of priorities to worry about. But again, the bullpen was a strength this year, I think. So keeping that a strength is important, because as we've seen, pitching depth, and it's becoming more and more important every single year in the playoffs, how important having a really deep pitching staff is. And so I would hope the Mets don't rest on their laurels from the season and assume that magically it's either fine for next year in terms of the bullpen, or they can afford for it to be worse. They can't afford for it to be worse. They should still try to improve it. So that's not their top area of priority, but I would hope that there can still be resources devoted to either improving the bullpen, re-signing Loop, making sure it's still a strength for next year. Because I think if you improve the rest of the team, but then the bullpen gets worse, I just feel like the team is worse. So I don't know. That's something to not ignore, even if it's not the top priority, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, they got some decisions to make. Are they going to bring Miguel Castro back? Are they going to non-tender him? I think they will keep him. I don't think he's going to make too much that would make sense to cut bait with him. So I think you have a good start between, May, Diaz, Castro, Lugo, Drew Smith, and they got to plug in a couple names. The one thing with Loop that concerns me, if he starts to get towards double digits in salary, I always am wary of signing the reliever off of the great year. It's almost like you want to find the reliever that was generally good and just had a terrible year, because they're just going to come back to the norm, because that's how volatile relievers are. So I think that'll definitely be something they got to figure out. They got to add a couple of arms, but I'm sure they will.
So the main takeaway from this episode is the Mets have a lot of work to do this offseason. So we'll kind of see where that goes, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to Ryan after all these moves are made and see if any of our kind of our predictions came true. But Ryan, thank you so much for coming on with us this week. This was a lot of fun. And if you could just let our listeners know where they could find you on social media so they could start listening to you all the time.
Yeah, for sure. I enjoy being a guest sometime and not having to lead the conversations. You can find me at Finkelstein Ryan on Twitter. Find the show at Locked On Mets. You can find Locked On Mets wherever you get your podcasts, and we are now on YouTube. So go there and subscribe.
Oh, it's exciting. So make sure to go check out Ryan and all the great work he does. As always, you can find Elizabeth on Twitter at NYMFan97. You can find myself at Giblin_Jake and the podcast at Cohen's Corner Pod. So thank you guys for listening, and as always, let's go Mets.